Hi, everyone. Thank you very much for coming. I'm not used to talking to non-lawyer audiences, so if I slip into, like, habit and start babbling legalese, just shut me up or tell me I'm doing it. My presentation is really more like an introduction to the issue so that, and if there's time later on, we can go into some of the idiosyncrasies of this issue. Let me just start by saying this is not an easy, simple thing to talk about. It has so many nuances, so many complexities, and it's impossible in a 15-minute session to try to get to all of them. So the second thing I want to say is that this issue also defies like a one kind of solution. There are many different kinds of solutions. There are many ways of trying to address the problem, and part of it will depend on just your local circumstances, both in terms of like resources available to the state, your environmental agencies, to community groups. So understanding that this issue doesn't lend itself easily to a 15-minute presentation, I thank you for your attention, and let me see how to make this start working. Does the space bar work? It does. So I'm like... move to the next slide, right? Okay. So let's talk about the issue a little bit and what it sort of looks like and how it's sort of presenting itself. We have aging school buildings, increasing school enrollments, reduced money going to public education. So all of that sort of like drives, well, we got to go find the cheapest place to build a school. So that's sort of what many school districts, public school districts, are facing. And actually, this is mostly a talk about public school and public education. It does have some applicability outside of that realm, but I'm focusing more on the public education side. And this is stuff all you all know. This is your health audience, and this is meant for a more general audience. But as everyone in this room knows, children are more vulnerable to the harmful effects of toxics, and that... at least from a regulatory standpoint, there are not children protective standards for exposure. They're more based on generalized populations. It doesn't matter what your toxin is or what regulatory realm you're in. That just seems to be, unfortunately, a fact of life. And again, there's also a greater recognition and understanding and probably greater incidence of environmentally related diseases. So... that particularly amongst children, and here are just some of the statistics. And again, since you're all health professionals, you all are very acquainted with these. So I think I want to just give you some examples of like what's happening out there and how this issue can present itself, and then start talking about some of the policies. So as you all know, I'm from Rhode Island, and this issue came to our attention when the city of Providence decided to site an elementary school and a middle school on top of the city's former garbage dump. And these are the two schools. They look nice and colorful and brand spanking new. But there are problems when you put schools on garbage dumps because garbage over time decays, which causes the ground to be rather unstable, and hence you have handicap ramps becoming staircases, and you have ponding occurring all over as the ground sinks in certain spaces and not in others. So sometimes the ground goes down, you get a pond. Sometimes you have like drains that don't sink and everything else around it sinks. So, that's mostly aesthetic, but there are also contaminants on this site as well that this ground settling can somehow bring to the surface and create an exposure risk. And then, since the city didn't seem to like learn this lesson the first time after I sued them, they decided to use yet another contaminated site for a high school that was at one time the world's largest silver manufacturing site. And this site is heavily contaminated with chlorinated solvents and metals. It's actually abuts a pond that was essentially used as a dumping site, so this particular area right behind the building is very heavily contaminated. a half-hour drive from Providence in New Bedford, Massachusetts, we have a situation where an ash burn dump was used to site a school, and that's where garbage and materials are brought, burned, and buried. So you have a lot of very contaminated substances in the ground due to the burning, like dioxins. Because it's New Bedford, PCBs are also abounding on the site. And this is a high school that was built, and then across the street is a middle school. When they excavated the high school, the ash wound up across the street, and then they leveled it and then decided to build a middle school several years after that. Then this is the poster child for the school built on the contaminated site, the Belmont Learning Center, which now has a different name, which escapes me, which was built on top of an abandoned oil field and an earthquake fault, and this is turned out to be one of the most expensive schools ever built in the nation at a cost of $377 million. So this example led to some policy reforms, which I'm going to get to later. And then not only do you have to worry about contamination coming from the ground, but there are also off-site sources of contamination that can create problems for children. And this is a photo of the playing fields by the Cesar Chavez High School in Houston, Texas, which is located very close to a major oil refinery. And there was a study done by USA Today around air pollution at school sites based on toxic release inventory data, and this school was in the highest 1%. I mean, that's talk about numbers and that you don't want to be proud of, at the high 1%. Well, that's an example of those kind of a school where air pollution is a concern. And what all these schools have in common is that they're all recently built within the last 10, 12 years, and they all mostly serve low-income and minority children. So this issue is an environmental justice issue. Because of the populations that are, impacted by this. So let's talk a little bit about what to do about this problem. In the mid-2000s, I received a grant from EPA to inventory the existing laws about school siting. This is the report. That's the URL. I mean, I can get you. If anyone wants any of this information, I can supply it to you, because I know that copying down that URL and all the other URLs that are going to follow will be fairly impossible. So, we looked at all different laws, regulations, policies about the siting of schools relative to environmental hazards, and that's what's in this report. And we found that, in the mid-2000s, that 20 states had nothing on the books at all that dealt with the siting of schools relative to environmental hazards. And I'll just leave this slide up for a second. So if you live in a black state, as opposed to a white state, the black states on this slide were the states that had absolutely nothing on the books. Then we took a look more specifically at what was out there and wanted to see whether there were any states that had laws that restricted or prohibited the siting of schools on or near toxic waste sites. And of the 50 states, only 5 states had anything that came close to that. Another 9 states had some rules about the siting of schools near hazards. And 21 schools had like some sort of vague, you shouldn't do this. You should try to avoid using a site that's contaminated or near a source of air pollution. Half the states had nothing that even required any kind of evaluation of environmental impacts or assessments at school sites. And again, here's a map. The white states were, states that had like nothing, any kind of environmental assessment, and some required some looking at contamination on school sites, and some had some other vague kind of rules about assessing environmental hazards. And then we looked at whether there was any kind of laws that mandated some sort of public process about the siting of schools, and 12 states had something that approximated that. And 8 states had laws or some other kind of legal requirement that authorized the creation of advisory committees to school districts about the siting of schools. So what this report really showed was that there was not a lot of there, to put it bluntly. So with that report, advocates, some of whom are sitting in this room, went to Congress and said, you gotta do something about this. So in the height of the Bush administration, Congress enacted a law that mandated EPA, that directed EPA to develop voluntary school siting guidelines. And that was passed in 2007. And this law sort of like sat a while, but eventually EPA, under the Obama administration, created an advisory committee as part of the Children's Health Protection Advisory Committee, which is one of the many FACAs, that the federal advisory committees that advise EPA. And this advisory group was housed, again, in the CHIPAC, which advises EPA on children's health issues. And this was a pretty interesting group of people. It represented folks like me who were like more community-minded. It had school district officials. It had state environmental agency officials on it. And they then came out with a report in 2010 to help say what EPA should do about school siting. And I'm going to just talk very briefly about some of the recommendations. Again, this issue is so broad, it's really hard to like hit everything. So I just wanted to focus in on some of the key recommendations. One of them was to either ban or severely restrict the use of really bad sites. And in this report, which I, if you're interested, I really encourage you all to try to find and read, we developed this matrix that listed different kinds of hazards, and we came up with something called a screening perimeter and an exclusion zone. And let me just talk about what that means. A screening perimeter is a distance-based guideline to where you're supposed to inventory hazards within a particular radius of the site. So this is not like something that you do to exclude schools. It's more like this is what you should be looking for. And the exclusion zone was you really shouldn't build it within this distance if your site is that close to it. It wasn't an absolute bar to building. Rather, it was you should go elsewhere if you can. If you're going to go there, you got to really look at the environmental hazards. So the second piece was coming up with this very rigorous environmental review. And there's no way that I can possibly cover this. That's a presentation in and of itself. But the important message here is it's not like, check off the box. It's like really look at the different hazards. One thing I just want to point out is that in looking at hazards, you should be looking for on-site contamination, off-site environmental impacts, and impacts that using the particular site itself might have as a school on the general environment. So doing this comprehensive kind of review is what the CHIPAC recommended. The third thing was having real meaningful public participation, with the key thing being the establishment of a school siting advisory committee. And in the Q&A, I can go over that a little bit more, but that sort of helps institutionalize public involvement, ongoing, because this is meant to be an ongoing entity, not something that just gets assembled and then disappears. And these were just some other recommendations. One was having a set of mitigation measures and cleanup standards remediation techniques to help school districts understand what they got to do if they've got a site that has environmental problems. And we also recommended that that EPA develop child protective exposure standards. So the guidelines have come out. They were just released in October. I think there will be a presenter here that will talk more about them. And that's where you can go get them as well. If you use this URL, you can also access the CHIPAC report from that page. And that's pretty much it. So if we have good school siting policies, we'll hopefully have healthier kids and better school facilities. So thank you very much. And there's my contact information if you want to follow up with me.